All right, guys, welcome back to the Locked On Chargers podcast, coming straight from a victory in Sunday's game against the Bills. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, here with David Jorgemeyer and John Kegley, who all write for San Diego Sports Domination, which is how we got our start when we started covering the Chargers 3 years ago for that website when they were still in San Diego. That's why we are here now with the Locked On Chargers to bring a daily show to you guys. But for today's show, we are going to recap the game against the Bills and really just dissect it, get into some of the big plays of the game. And then we're going to tell you the positives and the negatives from said game and talk about what went right and what went wrong for the Chargers on Sunday. But first, what's up, David? How you doing?
Doing wonderful, man. Hey, we finally get to talk about it. Chargers win for the first time in, you know, 9 months. So, it feels great, man.
John, I know you were borderline depressed. I mean, probably just fully depressed last week. How are you feeling after that win against the Bills?
The Bills are who I thought they were.
That's a great answer. I like that a lot. Anyways, well, let's get into it, guys. There's a lot of big plays to talk about from this game. We're going to be quick because I know a lot of you watched the game, so we won't drag it out too long. After a 2-3 and out by the Chargers and the Bills back-to-back, the Chargers get the first score of the game with Mike Williams' first NFL touchdown from Phillip Rivers from 10 yards out. On a great play in the back of the end zone. Great throw by Phillip Rivers, threading the needle in between two defenders. And Mike Williams, great job holding on because he got hit. I mean, maybe before he got that ball, it was so close. I mean, it was not an easy catch by any means. And then after that, the Chargers got a three and out, including Uchenna Nwosu's first sack of his career. It was good to see that. And the Chargers drove right down the field again. And Melvin Gordon gets the first rushing touchdown of the year on a counter play, which was a great design, great blocking up front for 20 yards out. He could have walked in, basically. And the Chargers get out to a 14-0 lead, guys. David, what did you think about the strong start and the Chargers finally scoring early in the game and getting out to a lead?
Yeah, it wasn't on the first drive of the game, but, hey, it was still refreshing. I mean, it's good for the Chargers to move down the football field and punch it in. Melvin Gordon didn't have a whole lot of yards on the game, neither on the ground or through the air, but he was productive. He got in the end zone three times on the day, and that was, you know, two receiving and one on the ground, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, I think he did a lot with it when he had the ball. He definitely has a nose for the end zone, and he showed that again. The Bills did get a field goal because of an unsportsmanlike conduct on Desmond King on 3rd and 20, which we all know is unacceptable, but we will get into that more later. Melvin Gordon gets a 9-yard reception for the Chargers and just showing his all-around versatility, gets in the end zone again, John, on a great touchdown, and just keeps getting in the end zone, and the Chargers seem to be figuring out their red zone offense.
It is nice to have a red zone offense. Remember a couple of years ago, every time we got in the red zone, it was field goal, field goal, field goal, or just a straight up interception. And now we have a team that's scoring in the red zone. I mean, you talk about Melvin Gordon scoring and Mike Williams out jumping two Buffalo Bills players that are about to hit him in this small little gap. Rivers got that ball in there. This team is dangerous all over the field. Now that we're in the red zone dangerous, we don't have to settle for field goals. I mean, this team could put up 40 points a game if it actually goes for it, which this game they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't seem like they really put the pedal to the metal, so to speak. And Melvin Gordon had another 2-yard receiving touchdown after that. And then on one of those catches, guys, just an absolutely great catch by Melvin Gordon. It was a low throw down near the pylon. Basically, the linebacker had his back to Phillip Rivers, and he put it about 6 inches away from him. Melvin Gordon went down and caught the low pass. Just a perfect throw. Used Antonio Gates as a decoy, and just, I mean, great throw, great catch, and just a great play design. I really liked the play design on that one. Kind of a fake fade, and then you throw back shoulder to the guy at the front pylon of the end zone. And the Bills did get a field goal before halftime, sparked by a 57-yard throw by Josh Allen to Zay Jones. And that set up a field goal to make it 28-6. Kind of a misplayed ball by Casey Hayward. But, John, what did you think just about the first half in general? Did you think the Chargers had it in the bag then, or are you so Chargery that you were still a little bit worried?
The first half is exactly what I expected to happen based on what I said last week with how I thought we were going to win this game 37-14. I'm always skeptical that the Chargers are going to blow it or somehow mess this up, and not because of what the other team could do, but because of what we can do. I mean, as we do this recap, you'll see what I mean with mistakes and stuff that we can do, like fumbles and interceptions or something along those lines that gives the game away. I was really skeptical. I wasn't going to get my hopes up, but I just had a feeling if I got cocky, the Chargers would go, not so fast. Here you go, Bills. Here's a fumble.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think you saw the cockiness part of it with the Desmond King on sportsmanlike conduct too. I don't think he really did a lot. I think if he would have just kept his hands down, it probably would have helped him out a little bit. I mean, I think the motions are what got the penalty flag there on him, but on 3rd and 20, you have to know better. And you're right, John, they got lucky on a couple fumbles. Virgil Green had a fumble that they ended up deeming was out of bounds, and he was lucky because the ball was already coming out, and he just happened to be touching it when he landed out of bounds. And Tyrell Williams was able to jump on one of his own fumbles. That could have been a turning point as well. So the Chargers definitely got lucky. And when we're talking about the Chargers, you know, having meltdowns in their past, it started to look a little bit sketchy when the first drive coming out of halftime. Josh Allen hadn't looked comfortable really the entire game, but does lead the Bills down for a touchdown to make it 28-13, David. And I know even though the game was still a two-score game, it still was a little bit sketchy when you have the history of the Chargers to just give up, you know, let them go right down the field on you and score right after halftime and gain the momentum.
Yeah, you had a 22-point lead, and, you know, you probably felt pretty good, but you also always, as a Charger fan, have those thoughts in the back of your head that, hey, they might mess this up. They always do. They used to all the time. This is the type of game where they're just going to cough up a win. But they didn't do that ultimately, but still, when they scored right out of half, it just had those uncomfortable feelings crank up a little bit.
Yeah, and it just has to creep into your mind as a Chargers fan because it just has happened so many times. I mean, David, I know you've talked about, like, they've had a few different games where their winning percentage, their chance to win in that particular game at that moment in the game was 99%, and they found a way to lose that. I mean, the one that comes back to me is the Saints game from last year, where just they had no way they could lose that game, and somehow they lost it, even against all odds, due to fumbles and some other dumb, boneheaded plays. And that part, guys, didn't really affect me, just them scoring on the first drive of the second half, because when they scored their first field goal of the game, the Chargers bounced right back, and they were able to go put up more points of their own. And that's what you want to see from the Chargers, just the ability to respond. And that's what really got to me, guys, because after that, when the Bills scored that touchdown, the Chargers offense had three consecutive three and outs before Adrian Phillips stopped the scoring drive of the Bills with his first interception of the season. But three consecutive three and outs and got helped out by their defense that this didn't become a closer game. And then even after the interception, the Chargers had two more punts in a row and didn't get any more points in the game until Kazir White got his first career interception in his first game, in his first start, and that set up a Caleb Sturgis 24-yard field goal to make the score 31-13, David, and really put the game out of reach and seal it. But it came from the defense, not the offense.
Yeah, and you had a feeling going into this game that the Chargers defense had an opportunity to prey on a rookie quarterback, a guy that just didn't have a lot of experience, obviously being his first NFL game. And, you know, you knew they were going to do their best to try to protect him most of the through the game, especially early on with the LeSean McCoy runs and the passes, the short passes, just to try to get him a rhythm. But I think the Chargers did a good job of getting pressure throughout. They put him on the ground and a number of times, got a couple of picks. And, they didn't score a lot of points in the second half, only three. But at that point, they had already built up such a substantial lead that ultimately that was going to be plenty to get the W.
John, quickly, what were your thoughts? The Bills did get a garbage time touchdown to make it look a little closer at 31-20. But did this game play out kind of the way you thought it would?
Yeah, it basically did. I think the only thing that bothered me was how many times we missed tackles on Josh Allen, where we would literally be right there to hit him, and we would get like one arm on him, and he would just break away from us and start extending the play. And then there was times where we had him in our grasp and we couldn't take him down. Granted, one of them turned into an interception, but there was some things that just bothered me a little bit that I was not expecting. Mostly missed tackles.
The tackling remains an issue going into week three. And I want to get into just what exactly went wrong in this game, because even though the Chargers did win the game pretty easily at the end, there was definitely some concerning signs that could stick with them going forward. But we're going to get into that next. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Just go to MyBookie, that's MyBookie, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until after 7 p.m. and you want that extra $25 free play, make sure to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to get that extra $25. It's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner and take the extra money. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, guys, now that we're done with the game recap and we gave you all the big plays, it's time to get into what went wrong. I think every game has some ups and downs, and I think there's obviously always something to work for and to get better at. So we want to give you just what went right and what went wrong. So here we'll start with what went wrong. For me, guys, my biggest thing that went wrong in this game was the offense stalling in the second half. I know John has some thoughts on why the offense stalled, and I can kind of see his point. But it doesn't look good when you have five straight punts in the second half. That's unacceptable, especially when you have the chance to really put the other team away. When you have the chance to step on the other team's throat and you don't do it, that's a concerning sign to me, John. I know you have a couple different thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, the way I see it is they felt they had the game in hand and they don't want to give more of what they can do in their playbook schemes and stuff away, especially when you have probably one of the biggest games of the year coming up against the Rams, who are predicted to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. So if you have the game in hand, why waste some of your playbook on film just to run up the score when you could try and basically just run down the clock with some bland plays? Yeah, the offense stalled, but they called some of the most bland plays ever, which is basically just a simple handoff. You block the guy in front of you. Let's see what we can do. One of the things that I saw in the first half was plays where you would have guys going in like two different directions to freeze like a safety or a linebacker, and it would free up someone like Virgil Green. And if you were to show more of that, then they would go, okay, if you see this play coming, don't get frozen. We're going to send a linebacker this way, and you're going to go the other way, and we're going to draw them into an interception. But if the Rams don't see that on film, they can't prepare for it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, I think there's plenty of times where they passed the ball, and the offensive line just didn't seem to be holding up well. I get what you're saying about the vanilla running schemes and plays like that, but it seemed like even when they were trying to get first downs and run the clock more, they couldn't do it for whatever reason. David, what did you see that went wrong to you in this game?
So one thing that really irked me is, you know, in that first half when Desmond King got that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on a 3rd and 20, that's just something when you already got a decent lead and, you know, you're on a 3rd and 20 that you just cannot have. That can't happen. And, I mean, it looked like he made some kind of gestures with his hands. And we don't know. He might have said something because that, you know, that can definitely get you an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty as well. So that's always something to think about. But it's just, you know, something I expect better from Desmond King. That's not a play that we, you know, expect to see from a guy like that. You know, it just seems like to have high character. But Anthony Lynn said after the game in his press conference that he spoke to Desmond King about that, and that Desmond King knows not to do that ever again. He basically said, Desmond King will never commit a penalty like that again. You can be assured of that. So, seems like the head coach was just as angry as I was, and looks like he corrected that issue in the locker room.
Yeah, and I think the timing also makes it seem a lot worse when it's 3rd and 20, and you give that up, and then that leads to points on the board. That obviously makes it a lot worse. But yeah, I saw him get yelled at, and that was kind of, I don't want to say cool, but it was nice to see the authority of Anthony Lynn. Desmond King walked right up to him, and Anthony Lynn gave him an ass-chewing. I mean, pointing, yelling, I really wish I could have heard what he was saying to him on that play, because, I mean, he was just giving it to him.
Real quick, funny thing in the press conference is that somebody actually asked him what they talked about on the sideline. And Coach Lynn was like, that's not something I can say on camera.
Yeah, I probably could have guessed that. I mean, definitely not fit for television, whatever he was saying right there. John, was there any other bad things that you saw in this game that you want to get to before we move on?
The fact that we were missing tackles that I mentioned earlier was probably the one thing I would want to bring up, just because you couldn't tackle a quarterback. Yeah, Josh Allen's big and strong, but you should still be able to bring him down with how much bigger and stronger you are as a linebacker or a defensive lineman. Not tackling LeSean McCoy, because we're about to play Todd Gurley, and that makes you a little bit worried, but not really a big thing in this game that went wrong, but it's something that could be really big in the future, if you will.
Yeah, I think the tackling we've obviously already talked about, I think that does remain a concern. I did think they did pretty well against the run, besides the big run by Shady McCoy. But besides that, they look pretty good. And even with the missed tackles, I think even in years past, we've seen missed tackles that lead to huge plays. At least seems like this team is a little bit better at swarm tackling. Sometimes they do miss a tackle, but there's usually a couple other guys there to clean it up, which is good to see. If you are going to miss a tackle, you want to at least hold them up for the rest of your guys to join in on the party. But speaking of a party, there's a lot more things that went right in this game than wrong, I would say. Obviously, when it ends up in a victory, it's easy to think that way. But let's go ahead and get into it, guys. Coming up next. All right, guys. Well, since we're talking about the Chargers game, I guess it's time to tell you where you need to get your seats from to go to the game. But it's not only just the Chargers games. It also is any concert or any other event that you need tickets to. And we get all of our tickets through VividSeats.com. VividSeats is an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans with live entertainment and experiences that last a lifetime. With VividSeats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. You can go see that Drake and Migos concert. I heard that was pretty sick. VividSeats can help fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theaters, and more. And offers great prices and is easy to purchase. For our podcast listeners, we have a special offer for you guys. With promo code LOCKEDON, listeners can receive $20 off any order of $200 or more. Before, we are giving offers off your first ticket purchases. But now, since that promotion's over, now you can still get $20 off if your purchase is $200 or more. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app and enter promo code LOCKEDON to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more. All Vivid Seats are confirmed and backed by 100% guarantee. Go get your friends. Go get your loved ones. Go make a night out of it and have an experience you'll never forget, guys, with VividSeats.com. All right, guys, so I didn't realize we were back on. I just had to turn off my Drake and Migos really quick. But I am back here with you guys, with John and David, to discuss what went right in this game. And when you win the game 31-20, which really isn't indicative of what the score really should have been with the garbage time and the Chargers seemingly giving up on offense in the second half, let's get into this couple things that went right in this game. Last time I started with John. So, David, what is the big thing the Chargers got right in this game, do you think?
So, I'm just going to start on the defensive side of the ball, and it's just Derwin James, man.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That guy is so good. It's so exhilarating to watch him play. Got a couple of sacks to add to his total. He was all over the field getting pass breakups, making good, clean tackles. He's just such a joy to watch, and I think the Chargers truly found – their safety for the next hopefully 5 to 10 years.
The broadcasters actually made good note of it, just talking about all the Chargers' young players and just the talent that they have, especially on the defensive side of the ball with the guys they drafted just in this past draft. I think you could give a positive grade for all the rookie defensive players that played in this game, including Justin Jones. I saw flash a couple times in there, and he didn't even really participate in the offseason and training camp very much. And Kazir White gets his first pick. Uchenna Nwosu gets his first sack. But you're right, the star remains with Derwin James. This guy is already playing at just a ridiculous level. He had really two sacks. For some reason, they gave him one and a tackle for loss. But in my head and in my heart, Derwin James had two sacks in this game. And, guys, when they were getting the most pressure is when they were using Derwin James. They used it time and time again because there was just nothing that they could do about it. It led to a bunch of stops for the Chargers defense. It led to a bunch of just big plays and just chaos in the backfield. He's so fast and so sure tackling. That's the biggest thing. And just, I mean, John, they have a new superstar on their defense and someone at least for his position that might be able to give Joey Bosa a run for his money.
Wow. I don't know about giving Joey Bosa a run for his money, but I think you can give Melvin Ingram a run for his money as someone that could go with Joey Bosa. If you got a guy that's covering passes and is getting sacks and is making plays in the run game, all from being maybe 10 to 15 yards away from the ball, dude, we all thought this guy was going to be good, but I mean, this good? Wow. And we had to talk about whether this guy would be better than Eric Weddle. I mean, right now, what do you guys think? Do you think he's starting to live up to a little bit of Eric Weddle's status minus the leadership part so far?
I think that it's so early, but if you look at him as a rookie compared to Eric Weddle as a rookie, I don't think there's any. I mean, it took Eric Weddle a couple years to really cement himself as a good safety, let alone a great safety. What Derwin James has been able to do in his first two games, it's hard not to be exaggerated, guys, because it's just been so good. He's filling a hole that they've had since Eric Weddle left and doing it just at a phenomenal level. He led the team in tackles. He had a sack. He was the main pass rush presence. David, I mean, he's just a star, and I know there are some other good things I do want to get into besides Derwin James, because let's be honest, we could talk about it until the end of the show. But I want to also talk about the Chargers' red zone offense. Scoring every time, except for the last time when they kind of gave up. They might have gone for it if it was a little bit closer. But their first four trips to the red zone all end up in touchdowns. And that's without really Antonio Gates being a factor. And you also saw what Mike Williams could do in the red zone. David, talk about just a little bit how impressed you've been once the Chargers get in close.
Well, it was refreshing to see. I mean, when you get into that gold zone, as I've heard it referred to as, it's important to punch it in and get in the end zone. I mean, especially when you're going up against some of the more competitive teams in the league, like we're going to see against the Rams next Sunday, you got to be able to put it in the end zone. And, you know, you cannot trade sixes for threes. If they're getting in the end zone, you're getting field goals, you got to get in there. So they are very efficient in doing that. Melvin Gordon was a huge part of that in the red zone, just a machine with three touchdowns. Two in the air, one on the ground. And, you know, that's something, you know, that the Chargers have been missing. You know, his nose for the end zone and his improved catching ability has really made an impact with the Chargers' red zone efficiency.
And that one touchdown that he caught would have been tough for a receiver to make the catch because it was such an impressive catch. But I want to talk about the other running back, John, a guy I was clamoring for to get more touches this week, and my wishes were granted, as you pointed out to me earlier before we started. Austin Eckler, the official spark plug of the Los Angeles Chargers, continues to impress. Guys, it seems like every time he touches the ball, something good happens. He led the team in rushing by far with 11 carries for 77 yards and a long of 22. He doesn't get in the end zone in this game, but still shows that he can do things out of the backfield with another three catches for 20 yards. Guys, this guy's averaging like 10 yards every time he touches the ball, whether it's on the ground or in the air. I think he is a huge catalyst for this offense, John, and really one of the special ingredients that I don't think people really give enough credit to. I think part of the reason that this offense could be elite is because of Austin Eckler. I don't think they can do some of the things they did without him. He has been that special through two games this season.
I could definitely say that most of the plays that we have that were big were Austin Eckler, because Melvin Gordon doesn't get that many big plays. He gets the important plays. But Eckler gets the big plays. I'm going to catch a 2-yard pass from behind the line and somehow turn it into 12 to 15 yards every time. Or going to take a simple handoff and beat everybody to the outside for a 15-yard run. He's doing that a lot already. And you could say that Melvin Gordon's the main guy. He's the big guy. He catches all the passes. He's the guy. But Austin Eckler is basically a complement back to Melvin Gordon. It's basically a great duo, if you will. So based off what Melvin Gordon does, it sets up Eckler, and Eckler does it better than he should be doing, if you will. We could say change of pace back, but I'd rather say he's a complement back, which is a guy who isn't there just we've done this for a little while, let's switch it up real quick so we can get this 30-yard play. He's more of a complement back where when you use Gordon a little bit, and use Eckler a little bit, Eckler's going to show success constantly.
And I think that was one of the most impressive things to me about Eckler, John, is not all of those plays, especially the running plays, were well blocked. He's taking plays, I mean, he seems to make at least two guys miss on every touch that he gets. And that to me is the most impressive part. I don't know if his body could take the pounding that Melvin Gordon's does, because Melvin Gordon has proven it, but if Austin Eckler could take that kind of workload, I honestly think he could be better than Melvin Gordon. I know the two are very different, but as far as talent goes, as far as elusiveness goes, as far as getting up the field and finishing your runs, I think Austin Eckler could make a case of being the top running back on this team. I don't think he'll get that credit, because guess what? Melvin Gordon was drafted in the first round in the NFL, and Austin Eckler is an undrafted guy out of Western Colorado State. But I know that's kind of a controversial take. I just think how long before we just stop saying Melvin Gordon is the best running back when it seems like every time Austin Eckler gets the ball, he's more productive with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's very electric when he gets the ball in his hands. He obviously makes plays. Austin Eckler is the type of back that's good in the 10 to maybe 18 touch range. I just don't think his body would be able to put up with the pounding to be that every down back. That's why you have Melvin Gordon, and I don't like to think that one's better than the other. I think, you know, I like John's take where he said that they're complements. I just think, you know, they're one and one A. They're both, you know, special backs that do different things, but they complement each other very well.
That's being the Lightning and the Thunder. But that's going to wrap it up for today's show, guys. Thanks again for listening to us. Make sure to go follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to follow each of us individually on Twitter. Make sure to go subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. And also make sure to go like our new Facebook page. It's still very young, but the likes keep climbing every week. We post every show there, and we also will be doing live shows that we will share on that page as well to give you a behind-the-scenes look. But check in with us tomorrow. We have some pro football-focused grades and some sound from the game that we're going to get for you guys, so make sure you don't miss out. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time. Go Bolts.